Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this session on AASB 17. The title is From Transition to Transformation, Operationalising AASB 17 in Injury Schemes. And our presenters today are Michael Burns from Insurance and Care, New South Wales, and Somya Ori from Sign Advisory. I'll just quickly read out their bios. Michael is accountable to deliver the AASB 17 project for iCare. Over the past 2.5 years, he has journeyed with his dedicated AASB 17 project team through the many challenges and learnings that such a project presents. Having worked in the insurance industry throughout his career via audit and the last decade as a financial controller, he has a unique perspective on the implementation of AASB 17. Somya brings over a decade of experience in the general insurance industry through diverse engagements, including valuations, capital modelling and claims analytics. A recognised specialist in AASB 17, Somya started her journey supporting the private sector insurers with their implementation and audit, and is now leveraging that experience to support public sector schemes nationally in their end-to-end technical and operational implementation of AASB 17. She is deeply committed to delivering value through data-driven insights and is trusted by her clients for her ability to make the complex simple. Okay, and I'll just quickly do the acknowledgement of country. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands and waters where we live and work, travel and trade. We pay our respects to the members of those communities, elders past and present, and recognise and celebrate their continuing custodianship and culture. All right, I'll hand over to our speakers now.
Okay, thank you, Kieran. Somya. Okay, so we've all travelled a long way to get here today. I've travelled from Sydney, and my preferred method of travel was actually by car. My car needed a service, though, before I was to come up here. Needed some new spark plugs, a few new pumps, quite a few new other activities, and a full service. But I got this late information on my family, and I had to actually get from Brisbane to Melbourne for a function on tomorrow. So to cancel my car trip and actually come up by plane. But I enjoyed the journey though, because no matter whether I was going by car or by plane, the Beatles were always on my mind. And the Beatles are one of my favourite bands. I thought I'd introduce a little bit of you to some of the Beatle technology that AASB 17 links with the actual Beatles itself. So we've got an interesting journey ahead with us today. But that my car analogy is very much like the AASB 17 project. There's a lot of investment, a lot of change, changes in approach and changes in outcome as well. But it was a good journey for iCare. I want to share that with you, myself and Somya. So we're going from transition to transformation. On our agenda today, we've got four things that we want to cover. We want to cover the timeline, so the yesterday and tomorrow of AASB 17. We also want to take us through the financial and operational impacts as well. So some of you will clarify whether we're talking about a revolution or just an evolution, and to see you in that trip between comparing old and new. And then we're going to hop into the yellow submarine and take a deep dive and go into some of the key process changes that are happening within AASB 17 itself. I'm going to pop back up and talk about some of the implementation insights, and I'll take you through the Fab Four. So what were the four reasons to our success in this project? And then I'll talk about through what are some of the challenges and have that the attitude of we can work them out. So I'll take you through that. But then we'll both come up and talk about the post-transition considerations. So hopefully it'll be an enjoyable journey. I'm going to hand over to Somya now to take us through the first part.
Perfect. Thanks, Michael. And thank you for attending our session today. If you're here, I'm assuming you know what AASB 17 is. If not, that might be of slight concern. But regardless, AASB 17 is the new accounting standard for Australian insurance entities. Now, when you hear accounting, you might think, oh, maybe not much for actuaries, but you couldn't be more wrong. There's actually a material role for actuaries to play in the implementation of this standard. But before moving on to that, timeline. The AASB 17 is effective for public sector entities at 1 July 2026. Now, what that means is that the entities need to produce their first set of financial statements at 30 June 2027. Now, that might seem far away, but it's really not, because the standard also requires you to produce comparative information at 30 June 2026, which means the production of your balance sheet and P&L on the AASB 17 basis for FY26 year. Now, to enable that, specifically the P&L, that also means that you need to produce your opening balance sheet at 1 July 2025, which is in the past. This means that you are right now 5 months into the comparative year, and the timeline is fast approaching. What we hope to do as part of this session today is to take you through what are the key steps that you need to take to make sure that you actually are compliant with the standard. And Michael, of course, will share his learnings, which you can leverage as you go through this within your entities. Starting off, I will first discuss the high-level financial and operational impacts of AASB 17. What I'm going to do first is compare 17 with AASB 1023, and then I'll compare 17 with AASB 137. All right. When comparing 17 to 1023, there's actually not that many differences between the two, specifically for public sector entities, because entities did get a lot of exemptions in this space, which is why the very first one there, the level of aggregation, is actually expected to be quite minimal operational and financial impact, because the schemes can report at the scheme level, which is very similar to what you were doing on the 1023 basis. The next one there, liability of incurred claims. Now, this is an area where you would see a material financial impact when comparing to 1023, and that is because of two reasons. The first very material reason is illiquidity premium. Now, I'm hoping some of you attended the illiquidity premium session yesterday that one of my colleagues co-authored. You would have seen there's quite a bit of material impact because of illiquidity premium, specifically determined by the mean term of your liabilities. What does it mean? You add illiquidity premium to the discount rate, which would then decrease your liabilities. It would result in a positive impact to your net asset. Now, the other area is risk adjustment. You were already holding 75th level of confidence on 1023 basis. If you retain that means that the net impact would only be due to illiquidity premium, and hence that would decrease your liabilities. But you do have an option to change your confidence level under 17, representing the compensation that you need for the risk that you're holding. And that would then determine a net impact based on what you do for your risk adjustment. Liability for remaining coverage. Now, in 1023 world, that is unearned premium. Between 17 and 2023, there's not much difference between that. The only difference is that unearned premium under 1023 was based on premium written. Unearned premium under 17 is based on premium received. So the operation and the financial impact would be driven by the difference between the timing between the premium written and the received, and any delay that you need to now account for, which would result in a financial impact, but operationally you might need to figure out whether you even have the data when it comes to the received versus the written premium. Moving on to onerous contracts. Now, this is similar to a LAT test under 1023. The impact relating to this would be driven by what I've spoken earlier in terms of unearned premium, but also the discounting of your premium liability cash flows. You would now need to discount your premium liability cash flows using the illiquidity premium, which would decrease the discounted present value of those cash flows. And that would then might mean that your onerous loss will be lower than what it was under 1023, which would then also improve your net asset position, essentially. The last two there, the second last, expenses. Now, expenses wouldn't change because the operations of your business are not changing. What's changing when it comes to expenses is the definition of the expenses, the mapping of the expenses, and the allocation of those expenses under 17. Now, this might lead to a minimal financial impact, but operationally, this means that you might need to redo your expense process. You might need to explore what data you have currently and what needs to change for future, and how would this be incorporated in a BAU world. And this one in particular, not just for statutory reporting, but also for your budgeting purposes. This might be good to consider as to how you would do that in future. The last one, chart of accounts, financial statements and disclosures. Now, this would see the highest operational impact because you need a completely new set of chart of accounts starting FY27, but also FY26, which is the comparative year. You need to actually do two sets of chart of accounts, one on a 1023 basis and the second one on a 17 basis, which could be quite operationally complex, but also resource intensive because your finance team is going to be under the pump producing two set of chart of accounts and financial statements and disclosures for FY26. So highly recommend to consider that as you're resourcing for the coming year. All right, comparing to 137, I'll only go into the key differences for 137 that I've not spoken about already on a 1023 basis. One of the key, very key differences under 137 is that you would not be currently holding a risk margin for schemes that are reporting under 137, but under 17, now you need to hold a risk adjustment for those schemes. Now, you might immediately think for schemes under 137, I think risk adjustment is a big topic, and everyone thinks, oh my God, risk adjustment is going to increase your liabilities by a lot, and what does that mean for the financial sustainability of the scheme? But you need to consider that in combination with illiquidity premium that I spoke earlier, because risk adjustment would increase your liability, but illiquidity premium would decrease your liabilities. So it's very important to consider the net impact and then make a pragmatic decision on what your confidence level needs to be and what your illiquidity premium needs to be. Liability for remaining coverage. Now, the principle hasn't changed, but under 137, you wouldn't be holding an unearned premium. And that might still be the case if your coverage period is 1 year. But if the coverage period is more than 1 year for your scheme, that means you now need to hold an unearned premium on your balance sheet, which would increase your liability. And similarly for onerous contracts, which is essentially lab test, if you have an unearned premium, that means you might have an onerous loss, and that calculation would now need to be done under 137. It would increase your liabilities, but operationally this is a new process that would need to be undertaken. Expenses and chart of accounts, financial statements, disclosures, not much change compared to 123. It is more operationally complex because under 137, the disclosures were quite minimal, and you'll need to now produce them under 17, which are quite a large set of disclosures, I would say. All right. So what does this mean in terms of the processes? How do you operationalize this? Where are the biggest impacts? The first one, data, always data. I'm not going to go through everything that is on the slide. I'm going to highlight to you what the key things to note are with respect to data, which is reinsurance. So under 17, you are supposed to report insurance and reinsurance separately for everything in your financial statements, but also disclosures. You have two set of disclosures now, one for insurance contracts, one for reinsurance contracts, which means that you would need to go back to the drawing board to understand what reinsurance data you have and what needs to be improved in terms of the data, but also the processes. Second one, actuarial. So the biggest impact in the actuarial space is risk adjustment and illiquidity premium, which I've spoken to about earlier. It's not only a new process, but it is those two areas basically are the biggest material impact to your financial statements. Accounting, this is where you'll see the biggest operational impact because this is where a lot of the implementation will happen. When it comes to expenses, creating the new chart of accounts, remapping the existing chart accounts on creating new ones. But what I want to highlight here is as well here is that under 17, it's extremely important for the accounting team to work with the actuarial team because a lot of the accounts are quite new and the interpretation of those accounts would be quite important. And the translation is important specifically for disclosures because everyone needs to understand what the numbers represent so that you can then file them in a proper place in your disclosures. So we have definitely seen an increased collaboration between accounting and actuarial teams with the clients that we have been working on compared to the 1023 or the 137 world. And then similarly reporting, you have more granular financial statements and disclosures. One of the key things that we have noted is that disclosures are quite expensive and extensive, and they're quite transparent now. Like, there's nowhere to hide. Your balance sheet, your P&L, your cash flow statement, and your disclosures that need to all reconcile, and the minor, even the smallest of the differences are quite evident, because you have a lot of different splits that you need to do, the current and the prior accident year, the risk adjustment, the discounting impacts. So that's very important to note. All right. I'll now hand over to Michael from iCare to bring this to life for us.
Okay, fantastic. Thanks, Somya. Right, just a bit of background on iCare as well. So iCare's got 7 schemes transitioning to AASB 17, 5 from 1023, 2 from 137. And we've also got schemes that are not transitioning into AASB 17 as well. So just keep that in mind. We introduced a subledger as well. So quite a significant system implementation. And we're also introducing a new financial statement production tool as well. So so it's quite a lot of implementation activity that's taking place. So the Fab4 reasons contributing to the success of our project. Let me just work on here. Okay, the first one, collaboration. So we had a well-supported and committed team using proven methodologies to drive our progress. We also had the benefit of seeing the learnings from the commercial world and their introduction of AASB 17 as well, and looking at their successes, but also the failures as well. There's a lot of unsuccessful projects out there within the commercial insurance world. We knew that data was key, but we also knew the team was critical as well. So that was, we had to work together, as Somya noted. We had developers, testers, system builders, project managers, accountants, actuaries, and change managers come together, okay, using an agile project methodology that was maintained throughout the project. Everyone was at the table, they had clear roles, clear objectives, and there was and clear outcomes. Our small successes that we had of delivering a single requirement soon grew into a mountain of success, delivering full scheme capability of accurately processing real data. So we're actually able to have a controlled data set of 6 months' worth of real data. We were well supported. The CFO was the chair of the steering committee. The board audit committee received quarterly progress updates, and there was sufficient funding right through to the end of the project. We also had the team that was fully engaged, and when I spoke to one of the dedicated accountants on the project, they said this was the most rewarding project that she had ever worked on. So there was quite a lot going on. Secondly, understanding the data provided the confidence. So we knew that data was crucial, and it was everywhere for us. I said we had 7 schemes, but we've had 4 administration systems as well. And we had multiple spreadsheets that was actually being used. We started with the end in mind, and we built out the an end-to-end use case. So end-to-end using some simple data. We chunked this down into single small scenarios, and from a simple liability from incurred claims right through to progressively more complex and broader scenarios. This enabled the build to be created one requirement and one sprint at a time. We then tested just using 5 transactions. So we had a very small test case that we used all the way throughout. This provided the initial confidence for us to actually put in place the complete data. It also created a language that we had to use amongst all the team. And this is quite interesting. I'll talk about this a little bit more later. It's quite important as we developed our solution. We then predicted that if we could get it right for 5 transactions, then we thought we'd be able to get it right for an entire data set, 6 months' worth of data to actually pump through the system. And that actually worked for us as well, and I'll talk about that a bit more soon. So we used data from 1 January 2024 through to 30 June 2024 as our actual data set that we pumped through the system. And the lesson from the commercials was that they could get test data through quite easy, but putting actual data through, they had some real challenges in doing so. Further confidence was provided by overall reconciliations that were produced. And, for example, we were able to identify the total amount of premium that was pumped into the subledger that had gone into the general ledger previously and to reconcile between those two, and that gave us great confidence. Understanding the data and being able to process a controlled subset of actual data and reconcile the data provided that confidence. All right, knowledge. The aggregated knowledge was sourced from many locations and developed along the journey and shared broadly. From a technical perspective, we had 1.5 accountants and only half an actuary. It required us to yell out, help, we need someone. And so Somya came to our help at many times and from science. So we really do appreciate the support provided throughout the actual project. But our decision to bring on a dedicated actuary into the project was critical for us. They lifted the knowledge within the entire team and really enhanced that understanding right across the team as well, particularly when you were building out, you know, using system developers that needed an interpretation of what did the standard mean and how that could be built, and then reviewing the results. We were also really fortunate to have a positive mindset within the team and having people who really wanted to understand how this standard would live in the real world and what are the implications of the key elements of it. And that desire was infectious right throughout the team, so something that we really appreciated. And this gained knowledge is now being shared quite broadly. And then fourthly, the deliverables. We focused on building robust solutions that could stand up to the anticipated scrutiny. There's a lot of scrutiny going on with our AASB 17 results, and I'll touch on that right now. So, and we were mindful that we weren't just producing a set of financial statements, actually more than just financial statements. We're supporting papers, including scoping papers, technical papers, actual, both accounting and actuarial, and they needed to clearly outline the conclusions we arrived at. These papers were subject to a lot of requests and a lot of activity that's making the focus of these papers themselves. And yesterday's illiquidity premium presentation was the highlight for me from attending this conference. And the reason being, it was actually the missing piece of the puzzle that we needed to be able to implement into our project itself. So I appreciate the efforts that the team have gone to producing that. Our other deliverables, as I mentioned, was the subledger and also the system to produce the financial statements. But also, we needed a strong control environment. You know, you think about you're producing financial statements, you're making a lot of changes, but ultimately your control environment has to stay strong. And that's the subject of most scrutiny. So our control environment with AASB 17 is currently being scrutinised by internal audit. And we know the financial statements will also be subject to significant scrutiny by the internal auditors, by the external auditors, and by the audit committee as well. I actually welcome the scrutiny because it gives us confidence that what we're building is appropriate and to produce those reliable results. And essentially, these results also become the history of our schemes as well. So it's quite important. All right. Moving on to the challenges. So we had quite a few of these, and we had the attitude that we could work it out. So our first challenge was actually harnessing the power of this diverse expertise. As we mentioned, we have many parties on this project. We had three external parties assisting us. We had internal accountants and actuaries, and also project and change staff. There were many languages being spoken, and the cut through initially was slow. We weren't talking about the same language. Then the team took one requirement and one small use case, and this was handed over to the developers, and they were able to present back their results for comparison. And the results were not accurate the first time they came through. But when they actually reviewed the results and understood the reason as to why they were not accurate and had the input from all those involved, they were actually able to work it through as to what drove the inaccurate calculation, to get the right calculation in there and then to further develop. So the simplicity of an easy example and then further elaborated gave us that confidence to actually be able to pump through actual data. So the team was actually developing their own language, and as we worked through the whole project, the language that team spoke was enhanced, but actually brought them together as well. And the challenges that they dealt with went from simple to really quite complex challenges. And so having that having the ability to learn on the way, but also develop a language between them was very powerful. The second challenge that we had was data. So the and this was trying to identify the essential data elements here was critical for us. So I talked about the development of those use cases. That was key. And some of them that we did develop was the liability for incurred claims, both mid-month and end-of-month scenarios, liability for branding coverage, both profitable and onerous scenario, and then moving from changes from onerous to non-onerous back to onerous again, and making sure that the application could cope with that. Period to end dates and then year-end dates as well. And we had inflation, acquisition costs, interest accretion, non-reinsurance recoveries and claims handling expenses as well. So many different scenarios. So this enabled us all to properly build the system and make sure that we actually had the underlying information that we needed to source as well. We focused on one scheme initially. That was our nominal insurer, probably one of the largest and most complex schemes. Putting that into perspective, we've got about $20 billion of assets in the scheme itself, and unfortunately even more liabilities. So we focused on quite a hard scheme first, and then we were able to roll that out to the other schemes. And we learned that by investing well in the first scheme, that it was a great investment of time, and it saved us money and time going forward. And those second, third, and fourth schemes seem to roll through from a timetable perspective. And then our third scheme was talking about the deliverables, and we knew that we had to meet the information needs of the stakeholders because we had many stakeholders, not the least being New South Wales Treasury, CERA, New South Wales Audit Office, and their partners, and internally risk, internal audit, the executives, the finance team, and also the board and the audit committee. But one of our stakeholders that we were really mindful of was our own staff as well. Yeah, they were dealing with understanding their needs and making sure that trying to move away from manual activities and manual processes to move towards more automated processes was actually key and beneficial for our own staff. But what we're witnessing now as well is that the requests for information relating to AASB 17 is intensifying. I talked about internal audit before. That's subject to internal audit right now. We've got New South Wales Treasury, and I'll talk about more of them really shortly, but also the internal audit, the audit office as well, is wants to get involved sooner rather than later. So certainly critical. Now, these external parties, they're on a similar journey to ourselves. They don't have all the detailed knowledge of the scheme of AASB 17, but we're actually finding ourselves actually teaching them and building up their knowledge as well. So we're proactively working with them and collaboratively working with them as well, because we're on a journey to get to an end and show there's a good outcome for all of us. And I talked about our own staff as well. One lesson that we had in this space was that we didn't really consider our non-AASB 17 schemes and the utilisation of the subledger and also the financial statement production tool. We initially didn't consider those schemes that weren't going into AASB 17, but we now are. And so that was one of the lessons that we had. All right, so let's move on to our post-transition considerations. Okay, so the first one is that we actually have the need for continual education. So the team's developed a base set of training slides, and that's been delivered to our group execs, to finance, the entire finance team, the audit committee, and also to New South Wales Treasury as well. We've rolled those out. I knew that when a member of our procurement team said, I actually understood half of that. I knew we were on the right track. Because it was, I was actually impressed to really hear the truth. The education will continue, and part of that education will be our parallel run as we track the AASB 17 results against the current 137 or 1023 results as well. So that will be part of our education. Also, know that this education is gradual as well. But it needs to be continual. And I had to pull one of my staff members aside who was actually undertaking the training. They were using AASB 17 acronyms at pace. And people are not able to keep up with that. and just slow it down. You know, I actually anticipate that the training will go on for a 2-year period for all the stakeholders. So not just a, you know, not just a quick 6-month period. Moving through to reporting. We need to be mindful. We need to produce quality management and statutory information that meets the needs of all the requirements. Now, bring this on. Reporting. We had to update our general ledger. We've got 94 new accounts in our general ledger, so it's actually quite significant. And as we talked about, the actuaries need to be involved in that and that understanding the reconciliation of those components. And we also took the opportunity to update our financial statement production tool. All right. The last one I just want to touch on is the broader impact. And you need to make sure that everyone is available. So the information where it needs to be produced and then also transmitted has to be ingested into the higher level system. So New South Wales Treasury, we have to upload our budget information, and that has to be by March next year. And that's information for the next 10 years as well. We have to start uploading our actual information from July next year. So those systems need to be able to accommodate to be able to ingest that information. All right, that's essentially what I want to cover on the post transition considerations. I'll just now hand over to Somya for some other post-transition considerations.
Perfect. What I wanted to leave with you here is a few questions to ask yourselves and to your teams back home, because this is not the end of it. This is just the start. And there are a few things to consider. One is education, which Michael spoke about, very important. Educating all your stakeholders, ranging from your actuaries, your accountants, your claims people, your reinsurance team, but also informing some of the key stakeholders like the board, the executive team, the any steering committee you might have. So that's quite important, and that would take time because everyone needs to understand the impact to the scheme, both financial and operational. Statutory reporting, what are the key things to consider there? How would your process look like after you've transitioned to 17? Are your BAU process, is it streamlined? Are your systems able to cope? Are your processes all sorted? How would it look like for the teams? Do you have the right team, resources within the actuarial team, within the accounting team? So there's quite a few things to consider as you transition. Are the roles and responsibilities clear? Who owns the data? Who owns which parts of the disclosures? Where do they come from? At what frequency would be populated? At what time in July, August? How would you then revert it to your auditors? Data requirements. Is the board across the financial and operational impact and the auditors as well? How would you manage the audit process in FY26 and also FY27? Management reporting, similar considerations, but also something to how do you align management reporting with statutory reporting? Do the metrics look the same or different? How do you translate the current metrics to 17 metrics? That's quite important to consider. And also data systems processes. They should be ideally aligned. How do you make that happen? Similar budget. Is the budget team across 17? I mentioned expenses before when it comes to budgeting, but actually all the lines are quite important. And for the team to understand also and to set the budget. What's the timing of the first budget that's on the 17 basis? That could be quite specific to your scheme based on when you do the budget. And is the budget team across, is the education there for the budget team, but also your executives? So that could be quite challenging to transition. And again, as always, data systems processes, are they all sorted for budget? I'll leave you there. And Michael will conclude.
I'll conclude then ask any questions. So it's been a good journey to date, but there's still 7 months to go. And Paul, as you know, it's not time to twist and shout just yet, all right? You're on the dance floor. But wherever you are along the journey, okay, you've got to look at the first year of operations to build up the confidence that you have in your systems and processes as well. So there may be a couple of hard days, nights ahead of you, but a couple of key things to remember. It's important that you enjoy the journey, you're mindful of all the stakeholders' needs, and you continually learn and share those learnings as well over that period of time. Okay, thank you very much, and Somya, well done. And well done, and thank you very much as well. Any questions, happy to ask.
three questions have come through. There's about three.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay, first question. Having a AASB 17 project described as the most rewarding project I've ever worked on is quite rare. How did you build such enthusiasm within the team?
It's actually a lot to do with the individual involved. This was one of our senior accountants, and she had a desire to learn about the actual standard itself and to understand the intricacies of it. And by understanding that, she got the connection between what was required to be transferred from a standard into a general ledger system. So I think it was just her curiosity that she had. So and my hat's off to that initial thirst for information, but then that attitude also was infectious. So.
Just what I've seen at iCare, I feel what might have worked with you is also you freed up resources a bit. Like, they were dedicated resources working on 17, which obviously helps if they're not distracted by BAU processes, which are also very important, but that we are in a transition world. That might have led to the enthusiasm as well. Yeah.
All right. Someone wants to know how much has iCare invested into the transition so far, and how long has the transition been? And how many staff were involved in the transition?
Yeah, great questions. So it's a big investment of money. I won't give you the exact amount, but between $10 and $20 million. So you're actuary, so you probably know. In terms of you average that out, you might get there. We've been actually going for a number of years, because don't forget this standard for the public service was actually stalled for a period of time as well. And so we've been going for a couple of years. But in terms of from the actual application itself being rolled out, probably about, I'm going to say 13, 14, 15 months in terms of from the start of the actual real work to get the sub-ledger underway. In terms of total number of staff, I'm going to say about 10 all up. Yeah, we'll keep somebody was actively involved in this. Any other contributions to make?
No, I think that sounds about right. I think what I've also seen with your implementation is that it's not just compliance. You've really thought about your processes and what could be improved. So it's almost like a compliance plus transformation, where you've taken this opportunity to improve your processes for the future, improve your data, and then leverage that.
Absolutely. And don't forget that cost is spread over 7 schemes as well. Yeah, we've got $55 billion of assets that we're managing amongst these schemes, and so it's a worthwhile investment to make.
Okay, next question. What were the criteria for including or excluding a scheme from AASB 17?
Okay, so it's whether it met the standard or not. It's but it was interesting, though, the ones that we excluded. So the main one that we excluded was the Treasury Managed Fund. Okay, it's self-insurance. So that was one of the reasons as to why that was not included. Secondly, the Dust Disease Scheme. So it's a pay-as-you-go scheme. So that was really the key base for that not being included. But what's really interesting, we're talking to Treasury just the other week, and whilst not a scheme managed by ourselves, but they have a long service leave scheme. And so I think it's Victoria is looking at whether that's included within AASB 17. So that's an interesting question as to those type of schemes, whether they get included or not. But that's probably more what's been excluded than what's been included. Okay.
Okay, got one more question. Can you share more about the compliance plus items you have achieved?
Yes, certainly. So I think from my side, so certainly the financial statement production, we had an old in-house methodology, which was like an aggregator of accounts within the general ledger. And to make changes, it was time-consuming. We had to rely upon the systems team to help us out, and it was not flexible. Whereas the new application, which is a SAP Analytics Cloud application, it's SAP, it's Excel based, We've got great control and we've got that great flexibility. And then the subledger. I'm going to hand over to yourself to talk about the key elements of the subledger.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few different automations, right? Before even the subledger, you had the roll forward process that the actuaries were doing, which has now been transitioned to the subledger, which will hopefully make the monthly reporting more streamlined and quick. Earned premiums was another one I noted, where that's now all automated within the system in terms of the calculation of the unearned premium and the earned premium. And then reinsurance. I know there's been a few challenges there, but that's another area which, yeah, has improved.
And I know we have to wrap up. Alyssa Cruikshank here from Sign Advisory. I just had one final question. It was great to hear about your journey to AASB 17. One of the things we have talked about is cost, it being a big cost. I just want to understand from like your kind of key stakeholders, being your exec team, your board, your audit committee, what has been the positive feedback they've said around the change in presentation? Have they said it's useful for decision making? Has there been positive feedback about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we're not at that stage of the project as yet in terms of producing our actual results, because we're waiting for some of these decisions around illiquidity premium to be landed. What they are pleased about is that the project has been green for the past 12 months and pleased with the progress we're making and the fact that we are on track to meet our timelines. They were pleased with the training that we provided them and that gave them just an initial view of it, but we know that there's a long journey here ahead. And what I'm looking forward to is being able to present the parallel run results, and so they can actually compare, you know, what are the current results versus the AASB 17 results. So once we get those, we'll present them early next year. So I think once they start having that information, it will bring it to life. Yeah. All right.
And I think that's it. The other question was quite similar to the last one, so I think that's it.
Just ask one final one. In terms of the
parallel
reporting, are you planning to do it beyond 1 July 26?
No.
Okay.
No, but if you think there might be some advantage to that, come and have a chat with me.
We might be getting a push from